Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, September 19th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get a preview of this week's Municipal Candidates Forum with Jeremy Shea, Charles Westmoreland, and Robert Barr. We'll get the details about this Saturday's festive cream tea at McPheeters Hall. Police Chief Bryce Johnson will be here with a look at September activities. And Sue Douglas and Sarah Schaefer will be here to highlight the KTOO Legacy Foundation. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno afternoon, currently 58 degrees in downtown Juno.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Donald Trump's appearance at a fundraising event in central Oklahoma over the weekend drew more than 100 demonstrators. KGOU's Brian Hardzinski reports they were protesting the oil pipeline near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, as well as the Republican presidential candidate's record on Native American issues.
No water, no lights!
No plane pipeline!
That chant was led by members of Stop the Plains All-American Red River Pipeline. One of them was Christina Owen, who said they were also showing solidarity with opponents of the Dakota Access Pipeline.
And we want to have a strong voice here today for clean oil and for Native rights. So it's not just an anti-Trump rally, as talking about some of these important issues as well.
Owen said Trump has a long and negative history with Native Americans, including referring to U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas while disputing her Native American ancestry.
So I would love to have him speak out and say something about these pipelines, to say something about Native rights and about their sovereignty and their land rights. And that's something that we're just not hearing.
Owen is the Democratic nominee for this fall's election for Oklahoma's 4th Congressional District and is hoping to unseat Republican U.S. Representative Tom Cole, who's a member of the Chickasaw Nation. For National Native News, I'm Brian Hardzinski in Norman, Oklahoma.
A federal court issued a temporary halt to one small area of pipeline construction on Friday. The administrative injunction by the District of Columbia Circuit Appeals Court pertains only to 20 miles either side of Lake Oahe near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. The three-judge panel says the delay is necessary to allow the court to study the issue. The judges say the order is not intended to send a message on the merits of the tribe's motion for an emergency injunction against construction in the area. The tribe issued a statement saying officials appreciate the brief reprieve from pipeline construction and say they will not rest until their land, people, waters, and sacred sites are permanently protected. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has taken the first steps in a long-term cleanup process for abandoned uranium mines on the Navajo Nation. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports the initial action pertains to the worst of more than 500 defunct mines.
The U.S. EPA allocated nearly $330,000 last month to the cleanup effort. The agency is also soliciting bids from private contractors to begin assessments of nearly 50 of the most unsafe mines. According to the U.S. EPA, fewer than a dozen have been fully investigated or cleaned up to date. Daryl Yazzie with the Navajo EPA's Surface and Groundwater Protection Program says the cleanup process could exceed $1 billion.
It's not going to address everything, but it's a good dollar value to start with. The effort is going to be a very large effort. Mine waste, if it's left unaddressed, will wash off and it's got to go somewhere. And it's going to go into a stream and has the potential of getting into the groundwater.
Uranium mining was banned on the Navajo Nation in 2005, but its effects are still being felt in many rural communities. Studies of uranium's health effects are ongoing, but elevated levels of radiation have been found in drinking water sources in homes near abandoned mines. That's been found to cause bone cancer and impaired kidney function. The U.S. EPA says the initial phases of the larger uranium mine remediation project will begin next spring. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The Cherokee Nation is gearing up for its second Elders Summit next week. This year's event is scheduled for 2 days, one Tuesday and one Thursday, in two different locations. A press release indicates the meetings in Veneta and Tahlequah will continue work started at last year's summit to address physical, financial, or emotional elder abuse. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
Mm-hmm. National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the National Indian Education Association, the only national Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. You can become a member at niea.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 19th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now with some gentlemen who are interested in voting. Charles Westmoreland of the Juno Empire, welcome to the show, Charles.
Thank you for having me.
Jeremy Shea of K2 and 360 North is here in the studio.
Hey.
Thank you. And Robert Barr of the Juno Library System and Juno Votes is also here. Robert, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks.
All right. I guess the two most immediate events we can talk about happen tonight and tomorrow. Who wants to outline those for us?
I can tackle it.
Go for it, Robert.
All right. So tonight we have the Juno School Board candidates debate at 360 in the studio and just the bottom of the building that we're in right now. Starts at 5:30, goes until 7. There will be an hour of formal debate with our moderators and the candidates, and then a half hour of audience Q&A time. And then tomorrow night in the Valley Library, we've got the assembly candidates. Same deal, 5:30 to 7, same time frame.
Okay. And for your information, these will be broadcast here on KTOO. Tonight's will be broadcast tomorrow at 7 p.m., and then Tuesday's will be broadcast on Wednesday. So that's a nice resource, but it would also be nice to be there in person.
Yeah, you get a chance to ask your questions afterwards and just see how people do with a little light grilling, maybe, some of our candidates.
Jeremy, you want to start by telling us a little bit more about tonight? Who are the hosts, if that's what you call them, or moderators?
Yeah,
maybe?
So, Robert will be there, of course. He's going to be doing some introductions. And then Lisa Fu, formerly of KTO, now at the Empire, and Quentin Chandler of KTO will be our grillers, our journalists handling the questions. And they've come up with their set of questions. And I was quizzing Quentin earlier about, tell me what to say on Juno Afternoon. He's like, it's not going to be a cakewalk, so it could be interesting. I haven't looked over the questions myself yet, but it should be interesting. Tomorrow night, Tuesday, we've got Lakedra Chavis from KTOO and Sam DeGrave from the Empire, who are our grillers tomorrow night for the Juno Assembly. There should be some interesting questions in there. I did get a chance to look over some of those, and I think it's good. If you're planning on voting, and hopefully you are in our municipal elections, hopefully this will help inform you and inform your decision.
Charles, before the show started, we were talking numbers a little bit about voter turnout. Talk to us more about that and why we should be getting people to the polls.
Well, usually, you want to have a majority elect people, but what's happened lately with a majority has been anywhere between 10% to 15% of registered voters are actually choosing who's representing us on the school board and the assembly. I believe we've gone from the 2014, the turnout was about 19% during the municipal race, then went up to about 24%. Last year was about 29%. So we've seen growth, but most countries, when they turn out to vote, they're seeing 70%. The U.S., we're half that on a good year. So if we're going to elect someone to represent all of us, it'd be nice if we had more than 15% of voters making that decision.
Yeah, and I think it's also important, it's easy to get swept away by, the national politics and the presidential elections, but really local government, most of the services, we consume as Junoites probably are local government services. The library system is under the Juno Assembly. The school system, of course, is the school board, and those kids that are in school learning things hopefully become productive people and not problems. If there are problems, the police and fire, that's local. Most of our roads are a mix of state and local. It's just so many aspects of our lives that we interact with daily are local government issues, and these are the officials that that have the oversight over
the water, locals. Wastewater, airport, hospital, you name it. I mean, chances are good it's local. Jeremy has a good point there that we do tend to get swept away in the federal and to a lesser extent even state level politics. When you look at the voter turnout numbers, we do a much better job at voting when it's a presidential election year. But when it's not, we do a much worse job.
So tonight is going to be the school board candidates. Do you guys have those candidates with you? Do you want to talk about them at all now, or should we save that for the moderators tonight?
Well, I'd say there's an interesting mix. I mean, we've got someone who just recently graduated from high school running in Kevin Allen, a familiar face with Jason Hart. And with the other two, actually all those except for Jason who ran last year are fairly new to us. So this is a chance for everybody to see where they stand and what they would do. I think what makes these races particularly interesting is in the last couple of years, due to the state's budget crisis, the people we're electing now are making very, very hard decisions. If I had to choose between serving on school board 10 years ago and now, 10 years ago seems like a bit of a cakewalk, considering we've had 4 to 5 years of cuts on the school level. Municipality is cutting, and there's another $4.8 million we're going to have to shave sometime in the future. These people are going to make those choices for us.
Right, and then it would be Dan DiBartolo. Am I pronouncing that right?
DiBartolo.
Okay, thank you. And Steve Whitney. So four, does that sound right for
yes,
the school board?
Yes, four candidates for two seats.
Okay. And again, that starts tonight at 5:30 at 360 here in the K2 building. It's downstairs. They're free, right?
Yep.
Yes, they are.
5:30 to 6:30, and then 6:30 to 7 for public Q&A.
That's right.
Right.
What's one of the best questions you've heard from the public in the past, if you could paraphrase one of those for us?
Well, it's always the perennial ones, right? Like the road, everyone's always curious about the road,
yeah.
the road.
Housing's always a big one.
Yeah. Okay.
There was one asked of municipal candidates, I think 2 years ago during the forum at UAS, and one of the audience members asked them what book they were currently reading. It was a little off the wall, but I found that to be one of the most interesting and memorable to see the responses.
All right.
It shared a little bit about individuals' personalities and also who doesn't read.
Robert, will you tell us a little bit more? So, okay, again, this one tonight is the school board candidates, 5:30 downstairs here in the K2 building at 360. That's from 5:30 to 7. Okay, tomorrow night are the municipal candidates. Robert, outline that one for us.
So that one is the assembly election. So we have an area-wide seat up for election this year, a District 1 seat, and a District 2 seat. There are candidates for each of those districts. The area-wide seat has two candidates, the District 1 seat has three, and the District 2 is, there's a single candidate running, but I would argue that it is incumbent upon all of us as community members to know who we're voting for and why. And I think one of the big hurdles to voting is education, is showing up at the polls and knowing and thinking, you know, having the thought run through your head, gosh, who do I vote for? What do they stand for? So that's a big reason why we're doing these, is so that people can either come or listen to them on 360 or read about it on social media or in the paper after the fact, and learn about who we're electing to represent us in our community. So the tomorrow night, assembly candidates, area-wide District 1, District 2. An interesting little FYI on that is that it's a common misconception that you vote for your district. That's not true. If you live in Juneau, you vote for all of the candidates, regardless of which particular seat they're running for. We just have it organized and structured that way to ensure that the community is being fairly represented geographically.
Okay. And that one is going to be moderated by Lakedra Chavis of K2 here and Sam DeGrave,
yes,
of the Empire. That's again on Tuesday. That's from 5:30 to 7 at the Mendenhall Valley Library. Charles, you mentioned one of your favorite parts of this whole thing is the lightning round. Tell us about that.
So the lightning round happens after the standard questions are asked by the two moderators and before we get to the audience Q&A. So each candidate is asked a question or a series of questions, and they get to answer yes or no. So we found in the past to be very telling, because if we ask a question on the road, you don't get to sidestep the issue. We want a yes or no answer. And if you give a maybe, we're just going to ask the question again until we get that yes or no. So for me, it's one of the parts I've always looked forward to.
They get 20 of those, right?
I'm not sure how many they came up with. Yeah. I think they've got at least a solid 10, maybe a little bit more.
All right. So as we were talking about earlier, voter turnout has been low. All of you guys are part of Juno Votes. You're obviously interested in voting. What is your message to our listeners out there if they're not going to the polls? How would you convince them to go?
Well, there's going to be changes no matter what, at the city level, at the school district level. It's going to impact everybody. So if it's going to have an impact on you, you might as well have a say in what that impact is going to be. And at the very least, if you want to gripe for the next 3 years, you need to go.
Yeah, I feel like your ticket, your entry fee to complain about the way things are or the way things are going is you should have at least voted.
And, you know, I would say that echo Jeremy's comments earlier that your local vote matters the most. If you care a lot about who our next president of the United States is, you should care just as much and more, I think, than who is representing you locally, because the impact that our local candidates, our local representatives have on us all is very significant. And I would say even more, you can vote now. Early voting is open as of today.
Okay. Charles Westmoreland, Jeremy Shea, and Robert Barr, thank you guys for coming in. Thanks for helping to organize these events. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
We'll also have the video version of these debates on our website. Our election page should be going live end of the week or beginning of next week. And you'll be able to find them within a few business days on either the KTOO YouTube channel. I'll probably share them with the Empire as well. I don't know if you guys take them. But
we'll take them.
Yep. So radio, video, both ways, live, in person, however you want.
Lots of options.
Accessible.
Yeah.
If not, we'll see either tonight at 5:30 at 360 or tomorrow at 5:30 at the Mendenhall Valley Library. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, September 19th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, and it's about 20 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Maggie Schoenfeld. She is, I guess, one of the originators of the tea. Should we call it a high tea?
It is a high tea cream tea.
Yeah, high tea cream tea at McPheeters Hall. Welcome to the show, Maggie.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, nice to have you. So the high tea cream tea is going to be this Sunday, the 25th. There's two seatings from 2 to 3, 4 to 5. We'll talk more about those details in a minute. How did this come to be?
So we started this after the church had burned down and was being rebuilt, and we started it to help get money to build the kitchen for the church. The first tea that we did was actually done out of a janitor's closet because that's where the sink was. And then the second tea was done out of a finished room that also had a sink, the AA room. But since we've installed the kitchen, it's been great having all of those facilities, and we've really enjoyed doing the tea.
Okay. And you've been attending Holy Trinity for a long time, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
that was where my parents were going to it when I was born, and I was baptized there and kind of grew up running around the old building. So it's a great church, and we've really enjoyed the new space that we have.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's not that new, I guess, anymore, but.
Okay, so this is a fundraiser for the church, McPheeters Hall, everything that's attached to
yep.
Holy Trinity, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So, again, you told me there's two seatings, one at 2 p.m. this Friday, so from 2 to 3.
Sunday.
Or Sunday, excuse me, and one from 4 to 5.
Yep. Right. And so it's $20 per ticket, or it's $100 for a table of six, and that includes three different types of sandwiches, two scones, whipping cream to go with the scones, fruit, and a selection of desserts. This year we're doing, I think, a couple North Douglas chocolate cakes, some chocolate eclairs, a gluten-free apple tart, and some pumpkin spice cupcakes with cream cheese frosting.
Wow. So it sounds like it's grown since the days of the janitor's closet.
Yeah. We've really been lucky in both the space, and the volunteers that we have been completely fabulous about helping with the serving and the cooking and set up and take down and everything. So it's truly a church event.
You may have already mentioned it, but back after the fire when you first did this, what made you think to do a tea? Rather, there's other kinds of fundraisers.
Our church is an Episcopal church, which is kind of the American version of the Anglican church, and which is the Church of England. And our family has always really enjoyed putting on teas. It's a tradition we started right before we went to England, is kind of the first time, which was when I was like 10. So we would have tea and plan for our trip to England. And since then, we've just gotten really good at making scones. So we figured we might as well keep up the tradition and make a whole bunch of scones.
Because you need something to dip the scone in, right?
Yeah. You need tea or clotted cream or whipping cream or something.
And what is it, do you think, if you could speculate, what is it that made tea so important in England? Or what is it that you like about that time when you're having tea? It's an afternoon usually, right?
Yeah, it's an afternoon event. It was actually generally started, I think, by Anna, the Duchess of Bedford, who started because lunch was served early and dinner was served late, like between 8 and 9 o'clock. And so she wanted something where she could sit down with friends and just kind of enjoy a nice, easy social time where she would serve tea, which was a popular beverage of the time, and little cakes and sandwiches, and that has grown into the British high tea or cream tea, which has cakes and sandwiches and cookies and scones and fruit and everything. And so that's kind of, we're trying to recreate just kind of a nice little time to sit down and chat with friends or strangers or whoever you want to.
And what do you enjoy most about it?
I really love the cooking. I've done a lot of the cooking for it in the past. I'm doing a lot of cooking for it this year. And so I like being able to provide a chance for people to kind of enjoy and do something. It's fun to take kids too. It's fun to take grown-ups too. We've actually had some people donate some seats for some of the seniors who live downtown. So it's been really a great opportunity in the past for kind of a community thing. And we're hoping that happens again this year.
Okay. If somebody wants to, should they get a reservation? How does it work?
Yeah, so you can actually go online. If you just Google Holy Trinity, you can buy tickets online. You can buy them at the door, or I think, yeah, you can, or you can call the church and the church sells them over the phone as well.
Has it sold out in the past?
It hasn't, but it's gotten, the first seating generally gets a little fuller. The second seating can sometimes have a little bit more space. So if you're going day of and you're not sure, especially if you have a slightly larger party, maybe go for the second seating. But definitely just call or find us online and see if there are tickets.
Okay, and remind us the times again.
So the first seating is going to be from 2 to 3, and this is Sunday afternoon, this coming Sunday the 25th, and the second seating is from 4 to 5.
Okay, Maggie Schoenfeld will be helping organize and helping create food and tea for this Sunday's festive high cream tea.
Perfect.
Are we missing anything, Maggie?
I think that just about covers it. Thank you so much.
Great, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 19th of September, 2016. It was on this day, 1796, President George Washington gave his farewell address, in which he urged Americans to relinquish their personal or geographical interests for the good of the national interest, and warned against partisanship. The birthday of William Golding, born in St. Columba Minor, Cornwall, England, 1911, joined the Navy, served on a rocket launcher, took part in the D-Day operations at Normandy. He wrote a novel about a group of English schoolboys whose plane crashes on a desert island and who descend into savagery. The title of the book, from the word Beelzebub, translated from Hebrew into English, Lord of the Flies, came out in 1954 and became a classic. It was on this day, 1819, John Keats, 24 years old, wrote his poem, which begins, "Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run, to bend with apples the mossed cottage trees, and fill all fruit with ripeness to the core." His ode to autumn. It was a productive year for John Keats, 1819. He wrote his ode to a nightingale, ode to a Grecian urn, ode to Psyche, all in that year. Died 2 years later at the age of 25. It's the birthday of the essayist and editor Roger Angel, born in New York City in 1920, who grew up with the New Yorker magazine. His mother was the magazine's first fiction editor. She divorced his father, and she married the New Yorker essayist E.B. White. Roger Angel became a fiction editor at the magazine in 1956, still a senior editor, edited the stories of John Updike, Donald Barthelme, Vladimir Nabokov, and in 1962 he told the editor William Shawn about baseball spring training, which Shawn had never heard of, and sent Roger Angel to Florida on assignment. And it was the beginning of Roger Angel's long career writing about the sport. He said, "Sports writers weren't supposed to be fans, but I would write in the first person about my own emotions, which you were not supposed to do. People used to laugh at me because my World Series pieces came so late, sometimes after Thanksgiving. But Sean didn't have a sense of deadline. Sean thought, everybody knows what the news is. Now tell us something else about it." Roger Angel said about baseball, "It's a great game for writers because it's just the right pace. You can watch the game and keep score and look around and take notes. Now and then, you even have time to have an idea, which in many sports you don't have room for." Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, September. "It rained in my sleep, and in the morning the fields were wet. I dreamed of artillery, of the thunder of horses. In the morning the fields were strewn with twigs and leaves, as if after a battle or a sudden journey. I went to sleep in the summer. I dreamed of rain. In the morning the fields were wet, and it was autumn. Linda Paston's poem September from her collection Carnival Evening, published by W.W. Norton and Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 19th, 2016. It's about 30 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Chief Bryce Johnson of the Juno Police Department. Welcome to the show, Chief Johnson.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so this is sort of a new thing that we have here on K2, is checking in with you and the police department and see what's on your radar, so to speak, and what's going on. Let's see, you mentioned geographic policing.
Yeah, so geographic policing is really something that's synonymous with community policing. Excuse me. And so the Juno Police Department, we've made a commitment to community policing, something we've been working at for many years. And so what geographic policing is it's it matches officers up with neighborhoods. So you have a neighborhood and you have officers responsible for it, and the officers know what neighborhood that is, and the neighborhood knows which officers that are responsible for it. And it's intended to tie officers to neighborhoods and make it more of a partnership as we go out and try to reduce crime.
Build relationships,
find problems, find solutions to problems. So crime is a community problem. The police department can not ever eliminate crime. It requires a community effort. And so there was a time, I don't know if you're old enough to ever watch Dragnet, maybe not. I don't know if you, there was a remake with Dan Aykroyd for Dragnet. There's a quote out of Dragnet that's, "Just the facts, ma'am," right? Just the facts. Well, that's not how we want to investigate crime anymore. It's not police officers. Just tell us the facts. That's not how it is. It's a partnership. So we value the input from the community. The community very much has a good handle of what the problems are in their neighborhood and maybe a couple of ideas for solutions. So geographic policing is an attempt to get the officers in the community closer together so that they can problem solve and find solutions together.
All right. How many sort of geographic locations or areas, give or take, would you identify in Juno? And yeah.
So for us, we have five areas. So Juno's split up into five areas now. And those areas are North and South Douglas, so pretty much all Douglas Island. Downtown, which would be from about Twin Lakes going out Thane Road. Lemon Creek, running from the Mountainside Estates to Fred Meyer. East Valley, which includes the airport area, and then the valley east of the Mendenhall River. And then West Valley, which would be west of the Mendenhall River going out the road to Echo Cove. And so the reason why there's five areas is because we have five patrol teams, and that gives each patrol team an area which is their responsibility. And so the sergeants that pick the areas of which ones that they wanted to work on with their team. So Sergeant Phelps, his team is going to be responsible for Douglas. Sergeant Campbell, Craig Campbell, he's got the downtown area. Sergeant Weske in Lemon Creek. Sergeant Dallas in the East Valley area, and Sergeant Gifford the West Valley area. So their teams, they're responsible for that piece of ground, responsible for communicating with the community, knowing what the problems are, helping to find solutions, and working with the community.
Okay, if somebody lived in one of those neighborhoods and had something they wanted to talk to one of these teams about, what's the best way to do that?
So if you need a police officer, please call 911 in an emergency. Or if you need a police officer right away and it's not an emergency, you can call our business line at 586-0600. This isn't to replace the regular way that police go to neighborhoods. So if it's a family fight, it's a car crash, it's someone's stealing something, someone's breaking into your house, call 911 in an emergency or call our business line. It'll go through dispatch and we'll dispatch an officer. That continues in how we do things. After that takes place. There are some emails now that you can email, which will go directly to these teams, and those are designed more for ongoing problems. We've done this type of model for a long time in the downtown area with our downtown walking officers. So they have a cell phone, which gets handed, the number gets handed out to all the downtown businesses, people that live downtown. And they can call that number, and you may or may not get the officer working right at the time, but you let them know, hey, I'm having this ongoing problem with someone sleeping in this location, or I have this ongoing problem with something, and the officer will make contact with you. So the idea is the same with these email addresses, and they're hopefully really easy to remember. DouglasIsland@JunoPolice.com is for the Douglas area. Downtown@JunoPolice.com is for the downtown area. LemonCreek@JunoPolice.com for the Lemon Creek area. EastValley@JunoPolice.com for the East Valley, which again includes the airport area and the valley east of the river. And then WestValley@JunoPolice.com, which includes west of the river going out the road. And so if you have, for example, you think, hey, there's this suspicious activity that occurs every Friday night, and you want to let the officers know, that would be something that you could put in an email there, and that team would get it, and they would be able to get more information from you or do something to work it. Or if you have a neighborhood association that's already up and running, and you want to have more communication with the officers, that's the way you could do that. If you're wanting to do a neighborhood watch and your neighborhood organization is wanting to do a neighborhood watch, that would be a way to communicate with the officers that work your neighborhood. So it's for ongoing problems, to communicate more with the officer about what's going on in your neighborhood. But again, don't use that email if you need a police officer right away. Still use 911 or the business line to report crimes and have people come right away.
Got it. So again, the email is even better than a phone call. But obviously an emergency situation, 911. But next step, after things have settled out and you need to communicate with these teams, email first, call first?
So if you're wanting to pass information on to the police department, right? So we're talking about things that aren't, I need a police officer right now. If you need a police officer right now, call dispatch. They'll send one right now.
Okay.
But this gives you a way to communicate information that you don't need a police officer right now for. And I could give you a whole bunch of examples. I was talking to some folks out on Engineers Cutoff, and they have one specific area out there that they think that often people will go to use drugs, and it's a common place where people go and use drugs. Well, there's no one there right now, but that's some information they would like to relay to the officers, and so that would be appropriate, someone to put in that email and let the officers know. Someone may not see that email the day you send it, maybe the next day, but they will get that information and be able to follow up with you on how to work on that problem.
What inspired this initiative for you?
Well, so geographic policing is a very common police model. When we look at what community policing means, it really means taking care of community problems. And so if you have a person responsible for an area, it makes it so you know what those problems are and you have someone responsible to help take care of them. And it also helps the community be responsible because they can now help identify the problems, have someone to talk to and relay information back and forth. And so as we look at kind of how the crime rates have gone here in Juneau, and they've ticked up the last little bit, and as we have changes in our legal ability to respond to crime through the crime reform that the state has done, we've seen that we have to change some of the things we do to make an impact, and this is one of those things that we think we can change to help drive down those crime rates.
Okay. Year of Kindness, what's that?
So the Year of Kindness was, so Lieutenant Chris Sell comes up with a lot of good ideas. I'm used to her coming in with ideas, and you know, they're usually pretty darn good. So she came in with this idea. It really is a real simple kind of notion of be kind to each other, you know, which seems like duh, of course. But it was an idea of, well, let's make a overt attempt to be kind during this year. And really, I think what she was trying to get at was to be kind and also to bridge some gaps that may, to make some bridges with people that otherwise we may not associate with. So if you look at the Year of Kindness, what we're trying to do is encourage people to do something every day that just goes out of the way to be nice to someone else. You'll often hear us putting out information about when things go bad and when there was a crime that occurred, which is what police departments do, and we'll continue to do that. But our goal is to also put out information of when things went right and when something good happened. Hopefully that will keep rolling and make a positive impact. Also, what we're asking is, as you do that, occasionally, maybe once a week, do something for someone that you don't normally interact with, that's not in your normal circle of people that you would normally be with. Whether that be someone of a different religion, someone of a different ethnic background, someone of a person that's a little down on their luck and maybe staying at the glory hole, or whatever that difference might be. The more we understand each other, our hope is the less we'll be committing crimes against each other. And so we've got a whole bunch of partners. Lieutenant Sells worked really hard on it. She's talked to the school district. She's talked to a lot of different entities to get them on board. She's got an international nonprofit group that's going to send a researcher into town, I believe in January. They're going to do a baseline survey and then come back the next year and do a baseline survey. We have some indicators we're going to look at to see what difference this makes. It doesn't cost any money to be nice, right? So we're not spending any of our very tight budget on this, other than I'm here talking to you about it. And we'll use our Facebook page to advertise it, and we'll talk about it. One of the first groups that wants to participate, of all places, is the Lemon Creek Correctional Center, and the employees and residents out there at Lemon Creek. And heck, if they can go out of their way to be nice to somebody, I think the whole community could give it a shot.
So we should always probably be nice to our neighbors and fellow community members. But technically, when does this year start?
So the year starts at the beginning of the year,
as in
January 1st.
2017?
So it'll be a calendar year. And if you go to our Facebook page, there's some information about ways to get involved. There's kindness champions and things like that that you can become. I tell you, I was at a different meeting. I was at a Coffee and Cops, and I was semi-sworn to secrecy, so I'm not going to use any names, but I was being told a story of some folks that have already started this, and it was a young woman at one of the schools had created a new, I think it was Instagram, forgive me because I don't know all of the Twitter, Instagram, it's all this fog to me, but they'd started one of those, whatever they are, and they just start sending messages to people at the school saying, hey, you really look good today, or boy, you sure did a good job, and whatever. It was kind messages. We hear all the time about cyberbullying. This was the opposite of it. And they were getting stuff back. Who is this? And who said this nice thing about me? This is so cool. You know, and that wasn't an idea that anyone at the police department had. It was someone just taking the idea and running with it. And, you know, if we can reduce some of the incidents of discipline at the school, that would be great. If we can reduce some of the fights that happen around town, that would be great as well.
Okay. And so it does sound like you are present on Facebook, the Juneau Police Department.
Yes, we are.
A good way to communicate with y'all?
We try to put a lot of information on our Facebook page. And it's a very good tool for us. You know, when Ryan Harvey went missing, we put some information out on our Facebook page. And we were at 56,000 people had seen it. And we're a community of 33,000. So it was within... It was quick that word got out. So we've been really we use our Facebook page to communicate a lot of things. But really, when we need help, that's a great way for us to get information out. And we have just a great community here that helps respond and does a good job helping the department out.
Okay. I imagine you guys probably have a weekly departmental meeting or something like that, at least once a month or once a week. At your last meeting, what were you talking about most? What's on your radar for what's going on in Juneau right now?
So we still have a lot of burglaries that are taking place, and so we've put a lot of effort into trying to stop the burglars. We've made a lot of burglary arrests over the last many months. We made two more arrests not too long ago. We put press releases out on both of those. But burglary seems to be continuing, so this is the same message we always say, lock your doors, you know. It's a great community here, but not so good, you can't lock your doors. Don't leave valuables out in your car. You know, if you're gonna leave something out in your car, what you're telling people is, I don't mind someone coming and taking this, unfortunately. So keep your doors locked. Don't leave stuff out. If you're leaving your bike out in your front yard, Odds are someone's going to come along and take that. It's still a great community, but stuff is going to disappear if you just leave it out.
Something else you mentioned before we went on the air about missing persons in Juneau. We've had a few of those in recent history. You're telling me that it's a unique or difficult environment. Why? Why is that?
So we had the one where we recovered remains just recently, and that case was 5-6 years old. And it was out in the Dredge Lake area, and that area had been searched. People walked through all the time. Our environment is a very challenging environment to find people, and it's got its own unique set of challenges. And so it is not uncommon in some of those type of cases for it to go years, even when we actively look and search. And our hearts just go out to the families with missing loved ones. I love my kids. I love my family with all my heart. I can only imagine what it must be like to be missing one of them and not knowing where they are. And so our heart just goes out to them, and we want to do everything we can to find their loved one and help them know what happened. But we do have some challenges here. We've got water everywhere, and water can be a challenging environment for missing person cases. And
how so?
Well, if you go in the water, we're going to have a hard time finding you.
Right.
It's just a difficult environment for doing stuff like that.
Sure. Well, Police Chief Bryce Johnson, always interesting. Thank you for coming down to K2 and giving us an update. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
I'm just grateful that you you let me come in and talk to you. And again, if you have a neighborhood and you already have a neighborhood association and you're up and running and you're ready to do some community watch type events, there's a couple tools you have. One is Nextdoor. If people don't know what Nextdoor is, it's kind of a closed social media platform similar to Facebook, but it's closed, so only the people in your neighborhood can look at it. It's a great way to share information in the neighborhood so you know what's going on in your neighborhood. And we've had some neighborhoods share their logins with the police officers responsible in the neighborhood. That's been a great way for them to talk and move back and forth. So if you have those things up and running, take advantage of the neighborhood officers and let us be partners with you.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Get straight, wait here while I try to find the exit sign. When will you stop asking strangers? No one wants what we want. Keep one eye on the door, keep one eye on the back. Never expect to be sure. You're working for the police and the private, the pirates and the pilots. Fingerprinted, waiting for the train. The doctor, the writer, the hairdresser, felt up and fingerprinted, waiting for the train. Lord, Lord, Mother, we are all losing love. Lord, listen, Lover, we are all missing Mama. Lord, Lord, Mother, we are all losing love. Lord, listen, Lover, we are all missing something I don't got. There's a place that ends here, I know. When they close the gates, I'll cry. I'm so tired and never sleeping. The whole world wants what we're on. Didn't make this up, I learned it from a friend. My friend is coming clean, she told me. Keep one eye on the door, keep one eye on the bed. Never expect to be sure who you're working for.
Love, Lord, listen, Love, we are all missing Mama. Lord,
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, September 19th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. About 8 minutes until the top of the hour, I've been joined in the studio now by Sue Douglas. She is on the board, the chairperson on the Juno Community Foundation. Sue, help me with all the boards you're on.
Okay. Oh, not all of that old stuff. Happy to be here. Thank you, Scott. And I chair the K2 Legacy Foundation, which is the little foundation that KTOO has specific to public broadcasting here. I also happen to serve on the Juno Community Foundation Board of Directors.
Okay. And Sarah Schaefer from KTOO Coastal Alaska, also here in the studio. Thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Okay, and we are here to talk about philanthropy and estate planning informational forum here in the K2 building at 360 this Thursday from 6 to 7.
Yes.
Okay. What inspired this forum?
Well, I'll start. I'm sure Sarah can throw something in here to make it scintillating. KTOO established a legacy foundation, a way for people to leave bequests in their estate planning to support public broadcasting. And this has been in the works for a few years. We've never made a real overt outreach to the community about leaving bequests to K2. It's kind of a subtle thing we do. But by having this forum, which we're partnering with the Juno Community Foundation to conduct it, we're going to hopefully help people to learn a little more about their local philanthropy and also help people learn how to plan their estates, particularly if they wish to leave bequests. And one of the things that we say right off the top is, don't think you have to be a Vanderbilt to leave a bequest or to plan your estate. Many of us who have just modest incomes and modest estates to look forward to later on, we're perfectly capable of leaving gifts to our community, no matter what the size. And this is what we want to encourage people to do.
Okay, Sarah, how did you get involved?
Well, when I came on board, I've been the development director here at K2 now since the beginning of June. And, you know, my responsibilities are multiple. Overall, I think the arch of my responsibilities is to make sure that the funding for KTO is sustainable and growing. And the KTO Legacy Foundation is one part of that. So when I came on board, we the plans of doing some type of event to create awareness for basically philanthropic giving has been already set, so we set this event in motion, and I'm really excited that we finally found a date and we have experts coming that are really knowledgeable and probably the experts in town, if I understand that right, Sue, that,
yes,
that can talk knowledgeable about that field, because I think for a lot of people there's this sense of, oh, do I really have to do this? Why do I need to get a will? I don't really have anything. But you'll be surprised. You know, it's, as you said, it's not only, oh, I have these multiple houses and that big estate. It's just getting, you know, getting the first steps, getting setting it in motion. And I think a lot of people don't even know how to. And, oh, my goodness, there might be this huge cost in doing it. But I think once you get more information, this task might seem a little bit more manageable. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
I also want to emphasize that the fundamental purpose for this forum is to really help people learn about estate planning, make it as simple as possible. We're very fortunate that we'll have Beth Chapman as one of our speakers and instructors. She's an attorney here in town whose field is estate planning. We'll have Mark Mesdag from LG Rayfield, who can talk on the financial side a little more. And so it won't just be, hey, come, we want you to leave us a bequest. No. It will really be an effort to teach people how to do it comfortably and how to think ahead. And we're just really fortunate we've got these two folks who can help us do that.
And you mentioned to do it comfortably. This is not always an easy thing to talk about, is it?
Yeah, that's the point. People think that estate planning can be pretty scary, planning what you what money, perhaps, or what assets or what properties you're going to leave to your children or you're going to leave to your neighbor or you're not going to. And it's a matter of just making it more clear and simple to help you think about the things that you really do want to do and the things you don't want to do.
Who would benefit from this? What age group?
You know what? I think the general perception would be, oh, well, you're retired maybe, and now's the time to do it. No, I mean, everyone that has a child or has some estate should really make some plans. You know, we never want to think of the worst case scenario, but I think in order to, do you want to leave this to the state to figure out if something happens, the worst case scenario? I think it's really for all age groups. And as far as I know, we have a wide array of people. The people that already said they would be coming, there's some of my friends coming that are my age. And this is definitely also on my list to do, you know. So I don't want to say, oh, well, you have to have a certain age to think about this. And we're, you know, this is part of our community engagement as K2 is. We're trying to educate our community on certain topics, not only over the radio, but this is another way of doing it. And we're so happy to have Faulkner Banfield and LG Rehfeld-Moore as great partners for us to lend their expertise.
Right. And I don't know if we said at the top, it's free to the public. So we really encourage people to come. We've got a little room left in the studio, and we would love for more people to sign up.
Okay, we're just about out of time, you two. Thank you for coming on the show. Again, this is an informal and interactive informational philanthropy and estate planning legacy giving forum this Thursday at 360, which is here in the K2 building, right here in the Willoughby Arts District next to the Slam and the Jack. From 6 to 7 on Thursday.
Parking available.
Parking available. Easy. Sue Douglas, Sarah Schaefer, thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same frequency.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.